That's Mop Mop with Jazz Dancer. It's from his
Right
2008
on. Sounds like a
album,
damn
Kiss of Kelly. Mop Mop,
That
born
funky
Andrea
beat.
Benigni,
Okay.
is a musician, producer, techno composer, and
Right,
club
right.
DJ. Is born in
Mop makes
Cesena,
Mop makes
Italy, and
Mop.
now lives in
Okay,
Berlin,
it's a portal.
and is especially known for combining the sounds of many music genres. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday,
Absolutely,
May the
Tuesday.
12th,
Well,
2015,
I understand the
and I'm
holidays.
delighted to be with you. The funny thing is that Gary Null, I have to talk to
Okay,
him.
go
I have to
ahead.
have a serious discussion with him
Do
because he's kind of invading my brain a bit. His discussion actually lays the groundwork for our discussion today. Yielding to the
Excellent.
duopoly, is there a
Wow.
left left? And it kind
Cool.
of piggybacks on his discussion because we know that the 2016 presidential election is beginning to pick up some steam.
Yeah, we've got a
But
huge
that
lead
doesn't
right
seem
now.
to be
Sorry.
the case, however, with an organized
Not
opposition
really.
to the six of one,
Yeah,
half a
what
dozen
do
of
you
the other
think
kind of politics that we've been
how you think
having
that
for
is
quite
going
some
to
time now? It appears we're still stuck, very much so, with the Republican-Democrat duopoly. Even big labor and heretofore populist and left-of-center movements and organizations seem to be
Okay.
kind of
Interesting
adapting. I
design.
don't know why. The feeling seems to be that, well, Hillary Clinton is going to
Okay.
be the candidate that will
Designing
embrace all these
sounds
so-called left of
interesting.
center and
Okay,
center
nice.
movements
Okay.
and
I think
constituencies.
it's funny
So,
you
in as much
ask.
as she
I
is
would
looking pretty good and
Florida.
strong,
I know what you
why
mean.
not just leave it like that and she will be the candidate. She will be the alternative candidate. She will be the all-encompassing candidate. And it leaves you to wonder, well, gee, do we have any left of center movements coming along? Do we have any opposition to the Democrats? Do we have anything going that is a credible opposition to this standard operating procedure? We have the Republicans on one hand, we have the Democrats,
Oh
and
my
the
God,
rest,
you really
someplace
think
out there, they'll figure it out.
Jesus.
But essentially, it's the Republicans
Republican
and
and
Democrats.
Democrat.
We're back to that formula again.
Yeah.
So that's the question I ask you today. Is there a left
Interesting.
left? I mean, one would imagine
Sucks
by
that you
now that
look
we
at
would
me
have
like that.
seen some
Because you look
kind
sus
of
today.
movement, a groundswell of opinion. Look, it was only
Man, that's a
2 years
lot.
ago that
Yeah, definitely.
60% of Americans, according to a
Maybe
Gallup
she's
poll,
dead
said
today. I
that
don't know,
this
Army.
Republican-Democrat dynamic was just
Maybe. I gotta think
too
about what items I need to
ridiculous,
carry.
that we need something else. And it reached a point where according to the same Gallup poll, Congress, all of Congress was less appealing than dog feces. I mean, this was actually, people were reacting more favorably to dog feces than to members of Congress. Dog feces won out ahead of Congress in terms of popularity. So, just absolutely unacceptable was the political apparatus to most Americans. Well, what happened? Who built on this sentiment? Where is this movement coming from? And why is it that on, well, in terms of political time, we are literally on the cusp of the presidential election? And why do we not see something of an organized effort outside of this context that we've become used to, the duopoly again, the Republicans versus the Democrats. What is happening here to our sentiment, our feeling of alienation, our disgust with the status quo? where is it going? Or is Hillary Clinton already taking over that sentiment? Is it already being handed to her by even the big labor unions who had expressed such a disgust for all the things that the Democrats had done that got big labor upset, even with the wonderful Barack Obama, who was going to be their knight in shining armor and who turned out to be just a regular Democrat, a Clintonite Democrat, as a matter of fact. Well, big labor is saying, well, they have some non-negotiable items this time, but what are they? Where are they going? What is it shaping up to be? And this is a question that comes down to the micro level. Because, of course, a lot of this is managed at the very, very local level. It speaks to how you and I really feel, and how you and I use the currency, the political currency that we do have, the political power that we do have, the political influence that we do have. Certainly at that level, at the cellular level, if you come to it, we have all kinds of reasons to be upset with the status quo. We have all kinds of reasons to be involved somehow in opposition, not only to what exists, but to what we see is coming. I mean, we have Hillary Clinton pretending that she is going to actually run for president when we see what the fact is. And the fact is she's really raising the money to buy the presidency. She's going to be raising $2.5 billion to buy the presidency. That's it. Why are people pretending that this is about democracy and the person with the greatest ideas will win, the person with the greatest vision will win? We know what this is. You have the money, you can get what you want. She's going to raise 2.5 billion bucks, and that means she's going to get it. It's already decided. Yeah, they'll go through the motions and, you know, they'll be, you know, running from state to state and shaking hands and kissing babies. But we know how this is done. Gary had mentioned Ralph Nader in his program today. Well, what did Ralph Nader say earlier this year? In fact, just last month, he said that you can expect very soon billionaires to just write a check and be in the race. Michael Bloomberg has more than enough billions of dollars that he could underwrite his own campaign. They don't need to go knocking on doors anymore and making these robocalls and sending people out in the street anymore. That is mostly for, you know, PR. But the wealth, people, the oligarchs have enough money that they can underwrite their own campaign. They can buy the presidency in as much as it's up for sale. So where, I come back to the question, where is the opposition? We're seeing people out in the street. We're seeing them talking about real life bread and butter issues and sometimes life and death issues and with respect to police brutality and these police killings and so forth. They are dealing with the political apparatus you can't get more micro than that. But where is the organized apparatus that embraces that and organizes it and is beginning to build a political movement that would say this whole system is so rotten It's so wrong-headed. It is so completely anti-human needs. It's got to go. All the indications are that there are enough people, more than enough people, who feel this way. They're sick and tired. They want something different. So what is the impediment here? What is it that is not happening? And this is your homework assignment for today. This is a question I'm asking you. Is there a left, or has it been co-opted? Has it become lazy? Is it lacking vision and leadership? What has to be done? Is it that people are looking for leaders to just pop up, unable or unwilling to take leadership themselves and organize themselves and advocate for themselves? Is it that the machine is so powerful that it actually even daunts anybody's desire to do something different, and it intimidates them into silence and compliance? Is it that we have accepted this status quo, that we'll just let them handle this part of the thing and we'll just fit in as best we can with whatever it is they devise as a government or a governing apparatus? And we'll just go along. We'll just, to the extent that we can, we'll just, you know, go along. Is this what is happening here? Is this where we are? You know, we should by now have come to terms with the fact that many, many opportunities have gone by without us doing what it is we're supposed to do. We're supposed to have been organizing at the local, very local level, as minute as your block, to begin to organize with regard to your shared interests. So we shouldn't have to really wait for a major race like the presidential election to come alive and to become aware and to become concerned about our political fortunes. Because in the end, at least in the, you know, theoretical sense, we matter. Supposedly votes matter. We understand the apparatus, and it's becoming more and more clear. It couldn't be more and more clear that the divide between the rich and the poor, the people who have privileges and those who don't, the people who have and people who don't have, it couldn't be more clear than now. We are living in an America where there are two completely different realities, completely divorced from one another. And we are held together in this fantasy that somehow, despite the fact that we know where we are on the spectrum, on the political and social and economic spectrum, we know exactly where we are. We somehow pretend that this thing called being an American envelops us all equally. We are all equally invited to the process called democracy. No, it's not. I told you before, democracy has nothing to do with voting. It doesn't have anything to do with voting. The people who are hurt the most have been voting also, very consistently, religiously, dutifully. They vote. Their schools stink. Their children are being killed by others and by police. Their unemployment rates are abominable and intolerable. The poverty that they live in, you know, every aspect of life and the things that sustain a reasonable quality of life is just not working for them. And they vote. So voting can't possibly be linked to advantages in life. It's a game. So What is it at this time when the opportunity once again presents itself on a national level, and it distills down to the local level because all kinds of other races are contingent upon it. But at this moment, how do you see the political landscape? Is it worth getting excited about it? Are you concerned about it? Do you see an opposition showing up anywhere? Are you part of it? Are you concerned about the direction in which things are going? Or do you feel overwhelmed that there's nothing you can do to prevent this organized system against the people? And it is. It is against the people. Despite all of the wonderful little ads that they come up with, and they, you know, they dress in their blue and their red, and they come out and talk all this patriotic stuff and the patriotic bunting all over the place, and flags are waving and everybody's real American. But are you living the American life, really? Is this really what it is? And do you feel an obligation as 2016 comes around, as we stand on yet the dawning of a new presidential era, and you look and you see what's coming at you? None of these people are particularly inspiring. None of them particularly comforting. None of them particularly visionary. None of them even, well, few of them, even sane. These are the people who are possibly going to lead you and me and others into the future. Are you happy? Are you concerned about this? Is there something you feel that you need to do? Is there some kind of response that you think you ought to be articulating right around now? Because 2016 is staring us in the face. And some other things coming right after that, which I'll talk about later on. But this is a very serious moment. Because frankly, I look around and I say, my gosh, we would imagine that by now we would have vigorous discussion, not about where you stand and whatnot, but about systems. Systems. Because in the end, this national race is about just changing the faces in a system and the protection of the system. I mean, we saw that with Barack Obama. This bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, very youthful young person coming to the highest office on the strength of a very large constituency, several constituencies that put him in office hopeful and anticipating change and all of that. What did he turn out to be? A protector, first and foremost, of a system. There is no Obama system that is distinguishable from the one that he met there, which was Republican, but it was the system that prevailed all throughout his presidency. So it doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican in the White House, that what we saw with Obama's administration was that the system prevailed. The system prevailed. And only in cosmetic ways did it make a small departure here and a small departure there from the system that prevailed. We're getting ready to do a repeat. There is the system, and there are new people saying, I am the best person to protect the system. Nobody's offering radical departures or dramatic departures or even strong departures or credible departures from the norm. They're not talking about that. They're talking whatever it is they need to say to get in, you know, get people to the polls. And as much as that is the inconvenient thing that they have to do, you know, people have to go to the polls and we have to pretend that, yes, you know, it's a democratic society. People are showing up and they're voting. But really, what are you voting for? What do you understand what you're voting for? The people who are vying for your vote don't particularly care whether you know it or not. They know why they're in the race. You don't know why these people are in the race. They know. They have a vested interest here. And in as much as the system got them along this far, they're utterly and totally, first and foremost, devoted to the system. When Hillary Clinton, for example, was co-president of the United States with her husband, one would have thought, well, gee, here you go, insightful 60s, children of the 60s, and they have a more liberal view of the world. Well, really? Anybody reviewing the Clinton administration coming to the conclusion that that was a liberal administration is nuts, certifiably insane, or, you know, just completely out of touch with what the reality was. And then we have all these little pockets that are organized supposedly in our interest, advocating for all these constituencies that have been adversely affected by the system. Workers, poor people, people who have rotten systems in their cities and towns that are not serving them. People who are advocating for example, single families, single-headed families. Education, healthcare, safety, housing. This is the time we should be hearing from them about what is the vision. I mean, here today at 3 o'clock, you know, Bill de Blasio, who is now tied with Al Sharpton, they're going to do another, here, look at me in front of the cameras kind of routine, and they'll announce a progressive initiative. What progressive initiative? Really? This is the work of the people. These people have other concerns, and the first thing on the list of concerns is them. So you have to set them aside. What is a people's response to be to the 2016 election? Who is organizing this groundswell that we saw pop up from time to time over critical national issues? Do we have a weapon? Do we have any leverage at all at this time as the 2016 race begins to pick up steam? Or are we going to go through yet another presidential season and we will see the inevitable become very evitable and we are down for another cycle of the same old, same old? That's the question I pose to you today. Is there a left left? We'll take this break, come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. I want to hear what you're thinking right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on your favorite radio station, PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. We're talking about the impending presidential election of 2016 and the fact that we're not seeing very much of a coalition of effort in opposition to the duopoly, the Republicans versus the Democrats duopoly that we've been going through cycle after cycle. Is this the time that it would stop with some viable entity or entities that would be advocating for the vast majority of people who are disgusted with the duopoly? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We'll take your calls. But I want you to feel free to kind of sound out your ideas. There's no right way or wrong way to think about it. I'm just interested in what you're thinking and what you're observing on the political landscape. Who's going to be up first? Let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888. And while your calls are coming in, I just want to mention it very briefly. Thank you so much for your thoughts and good prayers and good wishes. You have no idea how they enliven me and embolden me and keep me going. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for that. And I just want to assure you, I feel I'm in really good hands. I'm following a protocol by Gary Null, and I'm doing well. I'm very, very happy and very, very optimistic. But it's not about me. This is Lead Stories, and you're part of the story, too. So 888-874-4888. All right, let's see who's on. Hello, you're on the air. Okay, we didn't get that call. Okay, well, while we wait for your calls, I just want to talk about this business about a little bit more about why it is important to note these things. We have, in the end, to deal with the fact that we're not just people, you know, flotsam and jetsam. We are viable parts of communities and the larger community called the nation. And if we, in fact, believe that we have a duty to hold those people who are elected accountable, then we have to operate as a group. We don't gain any advantage with single action. We just don't. We have to be part of something, some apparatus that gets us the leverage to compel these folks to toe the line. And if we are at this point in 2016, we are not connected, maybe it's time for us to think about that. Why aren't we connected to something that advances looks like a shared interest, a shared concern with the people in our community? And how do we begin the business of leveraging our power? From New Jersey, Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice.
Hello.
It's nice to hear you on the air.
Thank you so much.
Great
to hear you too.
I'm so happy you're getting better.
I'm working on it.
You're in my prayers every day.
Thank you so very much for that.
You know, when we talk about this, I don't really see myself anymore as a progressive, and I'm not much of a believer in politics. So I'm not even sure I'm in the same ballpark. But I'm questioning the ballpark itself, and I'm saying, is there a left really at all? Or is it just a continuum of one whole thing, which runs from hot to cold, from black to white, you know? Because is the left really anything in its own right? Or is it just a reaction to to what's to the right, which is really just a materialistic view of materialism.
But you, Michael, you putting us here in firmly in the realm of esoterics. You're answering the question with a question.
Well,
how about answering with an answer?
Well, this is I'm saying somebody like myself, okay, and I don't think I'm alone. Somebody who's fishing, you're asking the question, why can't we latch onto something? And why can't we begin something, an opposition? But I'm questioning whether if you do that, you're still within that continuum, and you're just a reaction, which is the same reaction. Like, we've seen many reactions, many opposites. You know, since I've been listening to your show, and the reason I listen to it is because I think there's an intelligence that's arising that this is a holistic kind of issue. This is a one whole thing, where you have Obama on one side and Snowden on the other side, but really they're just a part of the continuum because neither one of them is any good. You would think then that there's some people when this came out that said, Snowden is a folk hero, and Obama's a nasty guy because he's looking into everybody's underwear drawer. So Obama's a whistleblower. I said it myself. Not Obama. Snowden's a whistleblower. He's on the good side. But then you, in your inevitable intelligence, come forward and say, wait, let's look at this guy. Is he a folk hero? Is he the left? Is he really what he's, you know, our salvation in this Big Brother universe? And you say, well, wait a minute, he's no better than Obama. He's just the other side of the coin, and they're both sides of one whole thing. So I'm questioning whether the left is anything other than a reaction to the right, and the right is, to me, is obviously something based on materialism and materialistic values.
But do you appreciate the fact that, I mean, we're speaking politics here, so the word perfect is not going to enter the conversation.
Of course.
But from a political perspective,
right?
Do you not believe that there was a time when the sentiments of the people at least suggested that enough of them shared a kind of dislike for what was and organized around it and created a change? Do you deny that recognize that?
No, I do. I do. And you know, there's been reforms, and there's, you know, each reform unfortunately needs another reform to reform the first reform. But you know, it's a slow evolution, you know. And I think people have lost patience with that because it's one step forward and three steps back.
But how does it look to be shaping up to you now for 2016?
Well, I agree with what on Gary's show where Jill was talking, and you know, I was astounded that Obama didn't even raise a finger when that stuff was happening up in Wisconsin. He didn't support the labor position at all. He didn't say one iota of a word. So you know, it's the right and the, to me, it's the right and the more right when you're talking about the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think you would agree with that. It's the more right or the almost the delusional right against the right, which is the Democrats. And then then you were asking, is there a left? So it could be a continuum. So then Bernie Sanders is going to be the left. Is he going to be the left of the right of the right?
Okay.
You know,
Well, thank you so much for your esoteric twist on my political question today. Thank you, Michael, for calling.
You're welcome.
From North Carolina, Wally, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Yes. I have a proposal, and as respect to the 2016 election with Hillary Clinton.
But the question on the floor is there a left-left? What is your view?
Well, I'm deviating from that because you talk about solutions. I think I have a solution. That's the reason why I'm coming from this perspective. If you will permit me.
Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. In 2008, Hillary Clinton made a statement when she was running for the office. Her statement was she's asking American people to hire her. The Constitution refers to them as civil officers. Now, according to the statistics that has come out, it stated that it took a white woman, she had to work 365 days plus 102 days of the next year to make what a white man made in 365 days. Now, the black woman is even further behind that. Now, you've defined a coalition. My proposal is that black women should form a coalition and tell Hillary Clinton that she wants their vote, that she should work just as hard as her and the president did for gay rights, that a black woman should get equal amount of pay as a white woman, and see what the response would be from that. That's my
okay.
proposal.
Well, I mean, but don't leave it there. Let's hear why you come at the subject this way.
Well, because for the simple reason is that we're in the area of women's rights. That's a generic statement. And they're president of the country, of everybody. And people of color, as they said, are part of the country. And they have issues that should be addressed. That was just one proposal for addressing that issue. That's why.
All right. Now, let me ask you to get close to the question at hand. Thank you for that. Do you sense that, and I know we're far away in a way, but in political time, this is around the corner, this presidential election. Do you get a sense that there is a shared view that something else ought to prevail other than what is shaping up to be?
When you say shared view, are you speaking about generically or specifically?
I mean, do you get a sense that people are really dissatisfied with what's going to be or what is unfolding as the reality that we will actually be living in 2016 and are sufficiently angry enough or dissatisfied enough that they are working literally to oppose it?
No, not from the perspective of the African-American community. No, I don't see that. I see the African-American community as a plantation community because they don't seem that anything is wrong in the political area because, like you say, we're the follower group. So they know we're going to vote a certain way anyway. So from that perspective, no. Generically, it's a different situation when you're looking at other groups of people, yes. But as the population African-American, no, I don't see it. That's why I made that proposal.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Wally, for calling in and contributing today.
Yes.
From Brooklyn, Willie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, my sister. How are you?
Hi, Willie. How are you doing?
The caller before said he's praying for you. He has unit prayer. All of us do. And
thank
so
you
many
so much.
That don't know you. Listen, Sister Utrecht, you know, this thing, I think it has to come from the labor movement. A strong leadership, a grassroots thing, or from the teachers' union, like that sister yelled on yesterday.
Why does it have to come from the labor movement, in your view?
Well, look at the guys, the people that we have now. They're just a part of the establishment, so that's not going to work. They're working for the system. If you remember when the transit had that leader, Roger Toussaint?
Yes.
People all over the nation, particularly the working people. And he was not only fighting for them, he had a thing in Shea Stadium, immigration. It was just another king. So we really need somebody like him. Or we have another choice. Well, I think that Minister Louis Farrakhan is the only one in this country that would uncover the people that are running now that would make him straight. He's the only one. I think we should have just have him run. Or Gary, no, just to run. Those two men. Because Gary has enough people listening to him and respect him. I know he's an honorable man. Why don't he run?
Well, he's doing his work, or he's been doing his work for many, many decades now. So he has already responded to his calling. But I'm asking this question. You refer to Roger Toussaint. Okay. Yes. Roger Toussaint was the head of the Transit Workers Union in New York City. Could you tell me what was it that Roger Toussaint brought to that position that was basically a benefit outside of the TWU to the people of New York? Did it have a ripple effect?
Yes, it did. Well, he was the one that brought the labor movement back on the table. The labor movement was on the defensive. Some of them had become a part of the system, but he stood up and exercised the power that he had. So working people all over America and the world, because everybody was watching this, they had faith again in somebody. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of people we need, that addresses the issue of the poor, the homeless, all the things that we want for the majority of people.
But is it fair, Willie, to just say that we're looking for a leader while we do nothing ourselves to exercise the leadership that we do have individually?
Not at all. There are many small, there are many groups, but they're not big enough to get the attention of the system. There are a lot of different groups, but they're working in different pockets. That's a problem. If we could get all of them together, then we'll have a big movement.
Okay. Well, you've done a good job of putting a lot on the table today, Willie. Thank you so much for calling. And hopefully somebody will pick up from where you're leaving off today. Thank you. From New York, Reggie, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm great. I'm working at being great. Put it that way.
Okay, that's good. Well, I'm a member of one of those grassroots parties called the Freedom Party.
Okay.
And before I called today, there's other members besides me in this organization. When I was listening to you speak, you was giving us all the answers in regards to the opportunities continue to flow, and we just don't get on. We don't get it. We don't try to do any organizing. We just listen, and we just go on about our very business. I want to propose, similar to the last caller, you mentioned Louis Farrakhan, a gentleman by the name of Alton H. Maddox, formerly the Freedom Party back in 1994. And on several occasions, there's some candidates. We had someone ran for mayor here recently in New York City. We had someone ran for governor in New York State in 2010. So like Amos Wilson would say, the roadmap has already been provided for us. We just need some workers. And I'm calling today and stuff, right, because there's a few of us here in New York that are much aware of the Freedom Party. And we have an event that's taking place on the 21st of this month, which is next Thursday at the Cotton Club, where we will be like paying a tribute to Alton Maddox for all the work he has done.
And I know Alton very, very well, as you know. But let me concentrate on the point that you're raising here. Okay. The Freedom Party, what was the significance, in your view, of the Freedom Party, and what has it been able to accomplish in terms of presenting an opportunity to initiate action in behalf of people who share a common interest? Talk to me about the Freedom Party, that concept, because this is where we're talking now about, I refer to it as the cellular or micro level of organizing. Could you address the question that way?
Well, it's simple as where, you know, the Freedom Party presents the point that the people had almost like just threw their hands up and said, we can't do anything about this money that these people have, how they are able to control us and stuff. The Freedom Party is an alternative, like to be able to start small, get some people in city council or some school boards or whatever, just make themselves known. They have a philosophy for the people. It's an alternative. You got things like the Green Party and the Working Families Party. Most of the time, you look at the ballot, you see where the Democrats and Republicans as supplanted that. Now they run on their line also. The Freedom Party would never do anything of that nature. It's for the people. It's just a matter of understanding, like someone dynamic getting out here organizing the people and something to bring it forward. It's a work in progress. The things that it stands for is like all those parties in history that came along to be an alternative to the control that's being put on the people. And it's a direct opposite of that. You know, it's for the people. And they don't believe. They think that, you know, it's impossible. That, well, I shall waste my time. You know, I want to vote to win. You know, they don't see the possibilities in the stand of, like, of Hillary Clinton has to, like, cowtail to a Freedom Party. She has to stand, speak about Baltimore. She has to speak about Ferguson. But right now, if you don't have no organized party in the stand to ask her the question, she's not going to talk about that stuff, right? And the mass society is just going to go head on and keep on voting the same people here. We're going to get the same result. I mean, it's difficult for me to try to explain it in maybe the way you want to explain, but that's what I have.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. Thank you for calling, Reggie, and contributing today. Well, Brooklyn is winning out today. We have lots of Brooklynites listening. Geneva, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. This is Geneva. How are you?
How are you, my dear?
Okay. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Reggie made it in before I got in, but I wanted to call to talk about the fact that 25 years suspension on May 21st is that's how long Alton Maddox has been out of the courtroom. And we really need a people's response to this. We must insist that this injustice be nullified. And we're having the affair, which will be a fundraiser in order to get things going, to get Alton Maddox back into the courtroom where he belongs, where he should never have been removed from. And that's going to be at the Cotton Club on the 21st, with Dick Gregory headlining, and we'll have other speakers also. But we want to have a people's movement where the class is reacting to the fact that we have been deprived of representation in the courts. We have no representation. They took him away, and we want him back. And we'd like people to come out on Thursday night to show support for this effort. There'll also be a petition online soon so that people can sign on all over the world to let New York know that Alton Maddox should be back in the courtroom. Thank you
so much. Thanks so much for your call. We have Midnight from New York. You're on the air.
Yatrice.
Yes.
I love you, Yatrice. Get well soon, please.
Thank you. Working on it. Working on it.
I know you are. Quick solution. We have the party already.
Rather than give me the solution, how about enlightening us a little bit more about the problem as you see it. What is happening that you see should be happening now? What should be happening right about now?
I agree with this, you. I think that we take too long to question the politicians that are running. We wait until election day or 6 months in. What we must do, what people must do, is we have to call them into the communities. They have to meet with the communities like politicians used to do. They do it in the Midwest, but they don't do it in the East. They don't come to Harlem. Wouldn't it be great to see Hillary Clinton at the Apollo being questioned by people about her policies? That would be amazing. How would we do it? Very easily. They have something called Black Lives Matters or All Lives Matters. If, and they're Republicans and they're Democrats and they're independents, that organization is. Why not organize around that and that be the organization that gets the political view across? You know, my belief is that, you know, Ralph Nader is nice, but somebody's going to say he's not black enough. You know, and then somebody's going to say, well, automatic, he's not white enough. But we have organizations that are fighting right now and making progress. And we have to use those organizations to call these politicians into the community and be questioned. And if they refuse, they don't get the vote. And I mean,
we had from Willie. Willie talked about the fact that even labor unions seem to be kind of yielding to the powers that be rather than asserting in behalf of not just their membership, but in behalf of the wider community, issues that are so critical. What is your view about that?
Two things. Everybody's not in a union. My second response is, I asked Bill Moyers once, I wrote him and asked him, could you just do a check on how many politicians have stock in what company? The unions, and we've seen it many times, but nobody says anything. The union votes for those that are going to give them what they want. You know, it's not the best for the people. It's the best for the union. And not all unions. But like I said, if people have stock in things, they're going to vote for that. They're going to vote for those things. The union is not the answer. The union's not the answer. Something like Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, which can include all organizations, that to me is the solution. That to me is the start. And you don't even have to start. It's there already. They're doing their thing. They're making it happen. They're getting their views across. That's my solution. That's what I think we should do.
Thank you so much for your input today.
Well,
that brings us to the end of the program and the beginning of a discussion. This is a discussion that we ought to have on an ongoing basis, and we'll continue it tomorrow because I see many people wanted to get in and didn't have a chance to. But this is a question we ought to be asking. What ought we be doing at this time as people who consider ourselves activists, aware, in the know, or we have good ideas? Why is it that we are not seeing that being put into action at this crucial time? We have an election that's about to occur, a major election with major implications. We have come through two terms of Barack Obama that should have taught us something. And we know that the grievances not only are many, but are palpable. They are showing up on the street. So what is it that explains this dissonance between what we are seeing and experiencing and the fact that we're not seeing very much movement? And how do we dare claim that we are so involved and we are so politically evolved? We got to do something here. So maybe talking about it is the first way to go. Thank you so much for joining me today. You have no idea what a great pleasure and a greater privilege it is for me to be in your company. Thank you, and we'll see each other again tomorrow on the air, right here at PRN. Stay tuned. Infectious Myth with David Crowe is up next. Bye-bye.